Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Hello and welcome to another Tech Talk. I'm here again, Stephen Scott. A pleasure to be with you. I am here once again from home as we continue to do this show the way we've been doing. Actually, for quite a while now. I'm getting quite used to this, to be honest. I like the closeness of coffee and facilities. Let's put it that way. Yes, anyway, let's move on quickly. Robin Christofferson's here from AbilityNet. Hello, Robin.
Hi, guys. It's the new normal, isn't it? And I've got an infeasibly large bucket of tea.
Yeah. And that's, again, where the facilities come in very handy. also with us is Eyes Andy, as I like to call him, or Andy Wynn, as everyone else calls him. Hello, Andy. Yeah.
Thank you. Hi, guys. How are you both doing?
Easy on the eyes, Andy.
Easy on the ears, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, oh, that definitely.
You might say that. And I definitely wouldn't. But, you know, I don't know, because I don't know what he looks like necessarily. He could be gorgeous. He could be like Hugh Grant. He sounds like a kind of Hugh Grant. I don't know where I'm going with this. But, yeah, that kind of idea. No?
Yeah. Hugh Laurie.
Definitely.
Hugh Laurie. Resist. Right, okay. All right, fine. The only thing I know about Hugh Laurie, I know he's done lots of great things, but the only thing I know about him is in Blackadder. That's the only time I remember actually seeing him was in Blackadder. The third, I think. Prince George, wasn't it? Prince George?
Prince of Wales, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's... anyway, moving on, because we've got lots to do today on the show, on this special extra episode we have here this week. We thought we'd do this because we've got so many emails. After doing WWDC and going through all of that wonderful stuff, it's actually quite nice to now get back into the email inbox and really focus in on that. And I know lots of you have been hoping we would do this for a while, so you get a little bit of an extra this week so that we can focus on this.
Email. We get email. We get your email every day. Here's your mail today.
So Andy's in charge of the inbox. It's always interesting to me you talk about the inbox in terms of pages. I was thinking about this the other day.
Yeah.
You always talk about it. So see, I've got 8 pages of emails. And I think, that's not how an inbox works.
He doesn't use dead trees, does he?
Oh, well, yeah. No. If you just appear behind the curtain of Tech Talk. So all of your emails come in and I share it with Stephen and Robin beforehand. So they kind of know what to expect and to prep answers to the best of their ability.
You say that.
I feel like it.
Yeah, you say that. I often say I've read it, and then I just listen to what you say when you read it out.
Yeah, which is fine as well, because you know, you're used to it. It's a subject that you know both of you know a lot about. So, I paste all of the emails. we've started using Google Docs. And that seems to be the most accessible approach to the emails. So, yeah, when I refer to 8 pages of emails, it means I've pasted them all into Google Docs. And that's
it's funny, actually, because we're
hit
really
the page down key 8 times.
Yeah, well, I am liking the Google Docs thing. We should talk about it, actually, on the show. Mm. And maybe 1 week can talk about how we're using it and why we think it's so good. But anyway, let's get to the emails, because this is always what happens. And then 57 minutes later, we say cheerio. So let's get into it.
I'm going to put in a vote. For every single email, we play the tune again because it's so good. What do you think?
So we should have a klaxon or something, shouldn't we? We should really have a klaxon of some kind because every time we get through an email, ring a bell or something.
Well, we've got Dougal we get a lot of, the sound of it.
Yeah, that's true. We get a lot of good feedback for the jingle, and I love it too. And we also get some people that aren't so keen on it. But, you know, a bit like olives or sprouts, Marmite. You know, if you eat enough of them, then you kind of get accustomed to them. So what
do you think? You're so upper class. Everyone else says Marmite. You had to come up with olives and sprouts, honestly.
Dear. Actually, right. I love Marmite.
Come on, quit it, Lord. Let's get to the inbox.
Let's get on with it.
We've run out of time already. Right. Yes. Barry is starting off the emails. Dear Steve and co, having just about got the hang of my iPhone SE works with much help from Siri, I thought it was time to look at downloading a few apps and Blind Square in particular. Reading more about GPS systems, however, I began to get a little concerned, as though I had previously read remarkable things, such as Capsys being able to find its way around parks, and someone saying that Blind Square was great when helping them to find their pitch on a campsite, and the original claims for Blind Square was that it was particularly useful to find a way around college campuses and other open spaces, which, living in a very rural area, is exactly what I need. I found more about Blind Square, and the article said that it was only really only accurate within about 30 feet, and it needed another supporting app to get the turn-by-turn help, which was mentioned by Robin. Apple Maps on my iPhone are of limited use. For example, when I ask Siri, where am I, it won't usually give me the correct house, name or number, usually the right street, although not always, but it will fail to put me in the neighbouring town, he says, which is 17 miles away. That just happens to be the postal address, the postcode as well, which my village falls under. To help me find my way around paths and lanes, and to find Robin's bridges, there you go, Robin, there's a callback. We really need something with near military precision, says Barry. It would be very interesting to hear if anyone knows of any such accurate apps for these circumstances. Not so much the well-mapped towns, although I understand that they can get other problems. And as I get a little older and my sight has gone completely, I am not so confident at getting around as I used to be, so any suggestions would be more than gratefully received. All the best. That's from Barry.
Well, thank you, Barry. Appreciate the email. And yeah, I kind of get where you're coming from here, because there is a frustration that comes with this. I mean, that's the one half of it, which is the technology itself. The, you know, what is the best app? What's the one that's going to do the job? And then you've also got the challenge of getting out there and it all working and in that real world environment, giving you the information you need. I don't know, Robin, feel free to chip in at any point here, but I don't know if it's that the app itself is the solution, because I don't think we have the military precision GPS that we need. We've talked a lot. I remember last year we talked a lot about Galileo, which is the which was going to become part of our GPS system here in the UK, but because of Brexit, that is now looking less likely, if at all likely, although I think there's still a few question marks around that. That was going to give us much better accuracy when it came to GPS. My question to you, though, Robin, is, because I don't know the answer to this, and I am wondering as well, and for, on behalf of Barry, is it the case that it doesn't really matter what app you use? Ultimately, they're all going to give you similar experiences because they're all working off the same satellites.
Absolutely. So, yes, now GPS, which is what we call the satellites in the sky to give us that level of accuracy, position
accuracy.
What is
it, global positioning system?
Is actually a system that is, there are other ones. There was going to be Galileo. So whether we'll carry on calling the ability to know where you are on your smartphone, you know, because of GPS going forward, when in fact that is just the name of the set of satellites that are up there at the moment. But it's kind of a bit like, Skype or Hoover or something now, isn't it, probably? But yes, it's the shortfall of those satellites. There basically aren't enough of them. And at very best, with a good view of the sky, you can see seven, maximum seven at any time. And if you can, then you can get up to 5 meters accuracy. Now, that's 5 meters in each direction. So you could be up to 10 meters or 30 feet away from where you want to be. So that's just the nature of the beast. It can be a lot less, and frequently you get put in an opposite street, you know, a nearby street or whatever. So that is just the nature of the beast. Now, if you have an app that supports Bluetooth beacons, which we'll talk about a little bit later on, you can get much better accuracy, but that's a different technology. Galileo, that would have been brilliant. I think SpaceX are putting up Starlink satellites, some of which are going to be involved in positioning. So I think it's a question of watch this space, excuse the pun, to see whether in the years to come, more satellites up there are going to give us that extra level of accuracy that we need. Nothing to do with Blind Square or Apple Maps, etc., etc. But the problem that Barry's having with him being put in a different town, he mentioned there about the postcodes. All I can think there is maybe he has his home address in his contact card on his iPhone, and Maps assumes that's where he lives and put him there, and that is a different post. You know, that's in like a different town physically because of the oddities of his postcode. I don't know, but normally it would be a street away, not a whole town away.
I think instead of focusing in on the apps, I think we've got to look at the technology behind it. And I wonder, therefore, if 5G is maybe closer to helping us get here. Think about what 5G is going to do. I mean, a lot of people are looking forward to faster internet, better latency. So, you know, you hit the play button on Netflix, it'll start instantly, right? That's all lovely. But actually, it is also designed to help connect technology together. So driverless cars, for example, will be able to communicate with each other. And that, we're talking street-level information here. So that a driverless car driving down the street will have the knowledge of where the car in front is and be able to deal with that and you know, respond appropriately and all the rest of it. That technology is what this is going to enable. And I wonder if we will benefit from that development in time when the apps become at the level that you are able to walk down a street and the technology around you is able to talk to your... So you'd say your smartphone, for example, could talk to the traffic lights and give you information so that you know that the green man has turned. You know, that kind of thing. Is it just that the rollout of this technology might actually be eventually the answer?
That's a really good idea, a suggestion. We should put that to them. So basically, at the moment...
It's going to happen, isn't it? Because this technology is already going to work together because of 5G. So it would make sense that that would give the ability to enable better location and information and better awareness of surrounding.
Yeah, so with autonomous vehicles, they have a whole bunch of sensors that are mapping the world around them as they go. And 5G is absolutely essential for the low level of latency so that when they get pings from the different towers that they go past, they can be confident that the latency involved hasn't skewed the actual, you know, the calculations as to where those different towers are and triangulate that with other cars in the area and that sort of thing. Each of the cars are going to be like a little 5G antenna as well, as is our phones. At the moment, it's a 4G antenna. But so all of those will be able to be triangulated with each other, absolutely. And currently, if the police want to find a bad guy or know where he's been, and they can't get access to his, you know, location history from his iCloud backup or whatever it might be, they can certainly go to cell tower information, which the mobile phone providers are happy to hand over to say which towers have been pinged, because your phone is constantly pinging different towers, and they can tell where you are roughly by which tower gets, you know, all the towers around you that get pinged and how, you know, which one gets pinged first and then the other one gets pinged slightly after, so it's slightly further away, and they can triangulate your position there. So 5G is going to be like that on steroids, because unlike cell phone towers at the moment, which are every sort of half a kilometer or so, are going to be every half a street, because 5G is much better at getting through walls and that sort of thing, but not over longer distances. So they're going to be much more often. You're going to be seeing these, I think, bread box sized boxes on lampposts and bus stops and building sites, I guess, I don't know. Maybe little kind of hydrant-sized things on the pavement. I don't know what they're going to look like. Maybe people who have, because they are rolling them out, aren't they? So I don't know what they are like.
But I guess as well, I mean, and we could talk about this all day because the opportunities are endless here, but it's not only that aspect of it. Also, if you think about augmented reality, if you think about artificial intelligence, if you start to combine all these things together, if you're walking down the street and you're able to use, say, your smart glasses that have come out from Apple, let's say they've announced the Apple Glass and we're all very excited, then let's say that we were walking down the street with our Apple Glass on, and we're able to use the technology that's in there to be able to see what's in front of us, so it can identify a lamppost or a bin or a table or a person and be able to identify all of that. So that helps you navigate, and then add into that augmented reality, which can give in that extra information about the surroundings, mix in the 5G capability with the GPS, and suddenly you have a real map available to you of exactly what you're looking at and where you are in the world. And I think this could be really positive. Now, all of this sounds great, but it doesn't help Barry today. And that's the ultimate problem we have, where, you know, this all sounds amazing, but the reality at the moment is that Barry heads out his front door and turns left because he thinks that's where the GPS is telling him to go, and then it tells him to turn back, and then he's halfway up a street and actually should have turned right further back, and you know, because it's not keeping up with him and it's not giving him the information he needs. So it is clearly we've got a long way to go on development of this, but I think my take is that things will get better, and we're not talking 20 years, we're talking next year, potentially. 5G is rolling out now. And I would say by next year, I imagine a lot of it's been stopped or scaled back due to the coronavirus pandemic. But the work is still going on. There's still work going on to develop all this. So I imagine next year will be this year was maybe going to be the big year for it. Next year will be, I think. So, but anyway, it's an interesting one. Do get in touch with your thoughts. And, you know, if you're using an app that you're really getting on well with and you think, actually, maybe if you did this with Apple Maps or you use Blind Square in this way, or whatever it is you want to talk about, you know, get in touch. Email techtalk@rnib.org.uk and let's help Barry out. Okay, let's get another email then, Andy.
We're going to stick with the GPS theme. And this one is from Graham. He says, this is for Robin, who was asking about a GPS app that has a pedestrian mode in it. And he might be interested in trying Nearby Explorer from the App Store. And this is a paid app and it's a bit expensive, but you can download and try the web version for free and see if it meets your needs. The only thing I am not sure of is whether it is available in the UK, because Graham is emailing from Canada. This app is sold by the AFB in the US. I don't know if he has tried Blind Square for creating a route using Google Maps, as we've just been talking about. That has a walking mode, but I'm sure he is aware of this. But yeah, that is an email from Graham.
Okay, so that was for you, Robin, but that could actually help out Barry as well. But have you tried that app?
Absolutely. I downloaded it. I had a good play. Now, he's right. There is two in the store, and I couldn't understand what the difference was. So if you search for Nearby Explorer, you get one called Nearby Explorer Online, and then I'm thinking that's what he's calling the web version, and that's free. And then you get the other one, Nearby Explorer, 75 quid. So what's that probably, you know, equivalent in dollars probably. I didn't download the other one, but looking at this one, Nearby Explorer Online, it's fully featured. It has all the different things that, say, Blind Square has plus more. It's brilliant. It's a really, really good app. I don't know what it means by online. Maybe that you don't have the capability of pulling down offline maps. Not sure, but you'd expect that to be an in-app purchase rather than a completely different app. So I don't know. I would strongly recommend just downloading this Nearby Explorer online is one word, and it'll be one of the two search results that you get if you search for Nearby Explorer. It's really good. Unfortunately, it doesn't know about pavements and bridges and things like that, certainly not in my area anyway. So even though it talks about walkways, so you can put it in pedestrian mode and it says follow the walkway, and I think they're calling something a walkway, which they don't know whether it's going to be a pavement, what they probably would call a sidewalk because it is an American app, or maybe it's I don't know, it could be a bridge, maybe they know about some bridges, but anyway, they call it walkway. But I can definitely confirm that it doesn't know about shortcuts through parks, or it doesn't route me over the bridge on a canal, which is a shame because it's a brilliant, brilliant app. Really, really good. It seems to have all the features of, say, Blind Square, which, if anyone's tried it, is incredibly fully functional, including being able to put a beacon on something and then, you know, move your phone around tricorder style and kind of zoom in on it, hone in on it. Plus the ability to detect Bluetooth beacons, which is a really nice addition. So if you buy a Bluetooth beacon, you can get them from Amazon, very inexpensive, a bit like the Tiles that we talked about last week, but not as proprietary as Tile. This is just a generic Bluetooth beacon, and you can pop it on things, and then they will, you know, you can be routed to those, which is, you know, could be the answer to Barry's last 5 yards problem if he's happy to buy, you know, £5-10 beacons and beaconize the places that he wants to go to and hope that people won't pinch them or they won't drop off or go rusty or whatever it might be. So it has that ability. And obviously in an indoor environment, like a work environment, you could pop those under the desk of the reception in the office, in buildings that you go to on a regular basis, that sort of thing. Not sure how they'd feel about you doing it kind of surreptitiously, but you absolutely could beaconize different areas. And then Nearby Explorer would help you get to those as well. So it is very good. It has a lot of points of interest, a bit like all of these apps, and it has turn by turn, by the way. But like with any of them, these POIs can be out of date. So I was walking through the park on a path that it definitely didn't know about, and I was passing by different points of interest being announced to me, and one of them was Warwick Police Station. And at that very moment, I could hear the bulldozers as they were. So the police station hasn't been there for about 2 years, and finally they are rebuilding it into something useful. It's going to be a GP surgery, but it's definitely not a police station. So that was kind of out-of-date information, but it made me smile because, you know, over there on your right is a police station. No, it's not. It's definitely not. We obviously don't have enough crime in Warwick to warrant a police station. You have to go to Leamington.
Exactly where I live is in the same thing. I was going down the street not long after I'd moved here, and the same thing happened. I was going down the street and it said police station, and I sort of wandered towards the building, and there was a police officer there, and he said, "Oh, sorry, I'm just closing up." And I said, "Oh, all right." I said, "Are you closing for the day?" He said, no, we're closing down the police station. We don't need it." I was like, "Okay,
that's good.
Fine.
Oh, that's amazing.
Not complaining about that." Yeah. So I was like, "Oh, quite happy about that." But that's good. Okay, well, let's get off the subject of GPS for a minute, because I'm sure there's plenty other topics to get into. So let's do that. But that's very interesting, Robin. I'm glad you tried that out, and thank you for the suggestion. I think that is really, really good. Mm. Right, Andy, what else have we got?
Hello, Stephen, Robin and Andy. This is from Kit. Have you already covered the release of Michael Fier's... Now, is that, am I saying that correct? Fier? F-E-I-R.
Fier,
is it right? Okay, yeah. Michael Fier's 250,000-word epic on using the iPhone for blind users. It's available free now on Apple Viz and on his blog. And do you know of any good tutorials or references covering Microsoft Teams? Because I'm finding it difficult to handle the blizzard of notifications it's generating when I'm in conference calls, and I'm tearing what's left of my hair out. Many thanks. That's from Kit.
Well, it's an interesting one, this, because... we at RNIB have started using Teams ferociously. Everybody's on Teams now, and everyone's raving about it. And I've got to say, my experience has been really positive thus far. I think it's a very accessible program for sure, with JAWS. That's what I'm using it with. The app is brilliant as well on the iPhone. I imagine the Android will be no different. But I mean, my experience has been, it's really good. But you're right, the notifications are endless. There are probably things you can do in notifications to maybe dull the amount you get, but truthfully, if I'm in a meeting and I'm getting endless notifications, I just mute speech. So, you know, in JAWS, for example, insert space S to put speech on demand, which I never really understand what speech on demand means, because it doesn't actually give you speech on demand, it just mutes the speech. Maybe that's an American way of saying mute speech. I don't know. But that's what it does.
Does it not mean that you can do a say all and still get it, but nothing else is spoken?
No, because I can't get it to speak when it's in that mode at all. Then that's, I just tap around. So
I think...
give me that impression.
Insert space S isn't speech on demand then, is it? It just mutes speech. There is
one,
though.
It says speech on demand. It actually says speech on demand.
I'm going to check that now.
He's going to do it now, isn't he? He's going to say... No, it is. I'm telling you, it is. Hey, go on, do it.
It says speech mute.
Well, not in mine it doesn't. It says speech on demand. Is that a special Lord edition of JAWS, is it?
I don't know.
He's got the Platinum edition, yeah.
Okay, yeah. I'm going into keyboard health. Go on, carry on.
Check this out. Okay, so there's that. Also,
ooh, toggle between
speaking
full speech and less speech. So yeah, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Basically, it does do the mute speech thing. That's the point. So it's great for that. And of course, you can do the same. Interestingly, on Mac, it's a bit more awkward. You could arguably just turn VoiceOver off, which I found annoying. But I had to actually go in and set up through Keyboard Commander a command, which was the right command key and... was the right command key, the right option key? The right option key and the letter S, and that is my mute speech. But I had to create that myself. That wasn't an option that I could find on the keyboard. And on the phone, of course, you can mute the phone, turn speech off quick and easy with that. So, yeah, that would be my only recommendation on that front. And that's been my advice to anyone who's having that problem. Mute speech is much better than turning JAWS off or, you know, unloading it or turning off VoiceOver and all of that, because I think that just creates other problems potentially. You know, just keep the speech on. That'd be my recommendation.
I have a feeling there are some scripts, third-party scripts for Teams. I can't remember who did it. Jeff Bishop, maybe? Can't remember. But they might well have that covered, whereby you can toggle those. Because, yeah, they are very verbose, as with Zoom as well.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, then, in a different way, though, Zoom doesn't talk. Zoom's different for me because Zoom will speak. When VoiceOver is enabled, Zoom will tell me everything that's going on, but not with the voice. So I'm on the Mac using Zoom most of the time, and it doesn't use the Mac VoiceOver voice. It uses its own voice, system, or whatever voice it's chosen. Yeah, system voice to do it, which is a bit weird. In terms of training, though, I would seriously check out the Freedom Scientific webinars page. There is a brilliant webinar on there all about this. There are a few issues with it, because Robin picked up on this. You know, they tend to do a lot of it. They tell you what's going on, but they turn JAWS off, which is a kind of a bit strange. And some of it, not on all of it. But it does give you a bit of an overview as to how it works, and it gets you into how the structure of the program is laid out. I've got to say, I feel with Microsoft at times, there's no unique uniform way of operating all their apps. They all tend to work a bit differently. So, for example, on Outlook, I use F6 to get my way around, whereas on Teams, I use Tab to get all my way around. And F6 doesn't seem to do very much. So it's a bit, you don't get that uniform experience. If you can use this app, you'll figure out the other ones. Again, Apple have kind of got that right. The way they lay it out in their Catalyst apps, especially across all of their applications, there is a kind of uniform behavior. Maybe not same layout, but uniform behavior. But I would definitely check out those webinars. They do lots of webinars on lots of different things. And I think it's about an hour long. It is very concise, and it gets to the point. It's really good. Check out.
Yeah, I mean, it is a very confusing app. It really is.
Logging on, yeah.
And yeah, I mean, it's one of these universal web apps. So, you know, it'll feel HTML-y to a certain extent. You can use H for headings. Mm. You can toggle between kind of the invisible cursor and the normal PC cursor. There's no menu bar, which is a bit disconcerting. There are top keystrokes that you'd want to learn. So Control 1 through 7, I think it is, will get you to the different main sections of it. And that's obviously Command on the Mac side as well. So, yeah, but I would always go to use the iOS app. I often have a Teams meeting going in my Bose Frames, and I have my earbuds in as well to hear my computer at the same time. So, yeah, I'm using two devices because just Teams is so much easier. And Zoom to a certain extent on mobile for calls and that sort of thing.
Of course, you do know now that you'll have to package the Bose Frames back up, stick them in the box, waiting for Bose to come and get them from you,
dear.
Since they're discontinuing it all.
Nah, they're just going to stop trying to get developers to create AR, you know, sound AR apps. But nah, they're not going to stop. They're not going to update the firmware to break the sound capabilities of the, you know, what's in there at the moment. So that's what I think anyway. There'd be uproar. Think what happened to Sonos.
They have said they're going to take away the AR capability. They're not just stopping it, they are removing the capability.
Unless they disable the compass, then, you know, the cool ability to put the volume up and down by turning your head and to use Soundscape, you know, that would be an uproar if they took away Soundscape.
It's finished. So,
what they've done, I think, is canned the whole branding and push to brand them as AR glasses. So, yeah. And ideally, they would take out the AR bit from the name and reduce the price, because I think everyone should have a pair of these to listen to their stuff.
I've got to say, I think they are the, you know, I often talk about the iPhone SE as being, should be renamed the BE, the blind edition. Well, I think the Bose Frames should be the blind sunglasses, because they are brilliant. Oh, great sunglasses.
Those initials don't work as well, though. No, stay away from
they
Bose.
They probably don't. Yeah, no. Exactly. Does tie in well with me, though. But yeah, okay. Right, let's get another email.
Well, anything quickly you want to say about Michael Fear's 250-word epic blind iPhone for blind users? That was Kit's original point. Anything on that?
You've mentioned it.
That's it.
Great. If people want it, go get it. Sounds great to me.
Fine. Moving on quickly.
No, really. Brilliant job. Thank you, Michael.
Yeah, absolutely.
Following on from the news we covered a couple of weeks ago now, the Apple Glass rumours. after John Prosser leaked it or had started rumoury on his YouTube channel. Julian emails in saying, hello there, did John Prosser say if the Apple Glass box will also contain a turbo scrub?
Nice.
That would be cool, wouldn't it? I don't think so. Look, we're not even getting earphones anymore with our iPhones, so I doubt we're going to get turbo scrubs in, although I think that would be a brilliant marketing plan, if only it's me that thinks that.
While we're rumouring, there was a news item that came out last week about saying that in 2022, not even next year, is when the VR version of an Apple headset will come out, and 2023 is when the lightweight glasses AR kind of AR version, where you can augment things that you're looking at through your normal glasses, will come out. So, you know, John Prosser was saying that they'll be announced in October at that event, and then coming out hopefully the year, you know, next year. But we'll see.
I want to make a serious, but also this may come across as a funny point. It's not meant to come across as a funny point. But there is a condition called Charles Bonnet syndrome.
Yep.
Where people suffer greatly with hallucinations in front of them. Mm-hmm. And it is a horrific, I mean horrific, experience for people that drives people insane with the experiences they have.
Yeah.
So I look at this idea of being able to create a virtual or imaginary world in front of you, you know, Lego characters running. I always remember this one, there was Lego, and the Lego characters all running around. And I just think, I don't think that's a smart move. I think, you know, you are going to really muck around with people's mental health here. You know, I don't think this is a smart move at all. Don't put that in front of, because, you know, I don't know, it just doesn't seem... It seems very strange to me, and it's another world. Maybe I'm getting to an age. Maybe this is it. I'm reaching my age where my mum did exactly the same thing and basically said, I've had enough of this. Sick of this world of technology. I'll just stick with my, you know, Nokia 3310. Leave me alone.
Your psychedelic kind of examples there would definitely not be broadly welcome, I don't think. But Sam, for example, my son... wanted to buy a desk for his bedroom, and he looked online, and there was this nice kind of cool looking futuristic metal one, and he wondered if it would fit in, and he could just point his phone at the part of the room where he wanted it, and it showed him the exact, you know, it looked like it was there, basically up against his radiator. The lighting and everything made it, you know, it took account of the ambient lighting and put the right shadows and everything. He said you couldn't tell it from reality. It was there. And
it that's
came
the problem. He's wearing that in his glasses.
No, this was through his Android phone.
I know, but I mean, if you imagine
right,
that through your glasses.
That's right. You won't know what to trust. Yeah. You won't know what is real that you're looking at. But he's got it now. It was a collection. And it looks exactly the same, he said, as what he saw through his phone.
As long as we can distinguish from reality, because we're struggling at the moment with social media and distinguishing what is fact and what is not. I think once we start being able to see things that aren't there, and, you know, start to believe that, I don't know, I'm just a bit wary about it. Maybe I'm cautious about it because of what I've experienced in my own life, where I've, you know, believed I've seen something, and this is what happens when people lose vision. The brain tries to keep up. So it will actually put images in front of you of what you think is something,
yep,
because you've heard the sound of whatever. And I'll get the great example of this I always use, which was the marker for me. This was when I really got a bit frightened by it, was when I was out and a situation had happened where my friend and I were walking down the street and a bus had driven by. And I said, oh, goodness, I haven't seen one of those orange buses for so long. Glasgow used to have orange buses years ago. And I said, I haven't seen one of those in years. And he said, that's actually a white bus. And in that second, the bus turned and became white. And it freaked me out. And it was, and when I spoke to the doctor about it, he said, that's because your brain is associating a sound, giving you an image that it thinks, okay, scramble through the index card book. Yeah, have that one. And it's put it in my head. And I've seen it as an orange bus. I would have sworn to you, if you'd said to me, give me 100 quid, if you think that's orange, I'd have given you 100 quid because I would have believed it. And then when it because I was then updated with this is actually what it is, it changed. And it made me start to doubt what I was seeing. And that was where the problems began. So you start. So anyway, I know this is very deep, but I just think it's that's ultimately where I am with it. That I just think, yeah, I'm not sure if AR in that environment is a good thing to put that in front of people. I think we're going to see a lot of problems. Your kids have enough problems in this world. Okay, let's move on to another email.
We're going to stay with some more current Apple products. This one from Steve. Dear Tech Talk, I'm writing for some advice as I'm thinking of replacing my old iPad Mini and wondering whether to get an iPad Mini or an iPad Air. My old iPad Mini is about 5 years old. The battery's deteriorating and it has a low memory compared with the newer models. I use it primarily for emails, audiobooks and listening to radio stations. Which includes us, I hope. I use it with VoiceOver. My wife, who is sighted, also uses it for photos as well as emails, etc. My current iPad Mini has a home button, which I find helpful. Am I right in thinking that the newer iPads don't have a home button? Is this a disadvantage for someone who is visually impaired? Are there any other disadvantages or advantages that you can suggest with one model over another? And on a related subject, I'm also thinking of getting my first iPhone. I currently use a Nokia N70 phone with Torx software. It's probably the oldest working talking phone in existence, as I've had it for around 15 to 20 years.
I didn't know you could still buy coal for the,
winding it up every morning. Yeah.
Nokia coal, yeah.
Any advice on which iPhone would be most suitable for a visually impaired person would be welcome. I know what Stephen's going to say to that. Always listening to your podcast of the show, and I find entertaining and informative. Keep up the good work. That's from Steve.
Oh, thanks.
Well, I do have some thoughts on this, actually. You're obviously thinking I'm going to say, it's the iPhone. Everything's the iPhone. Buy the iPhone. Just buy an iPhone. I wish I got commission for the amount of iPhones that I must try and sell. but honestly, I think the iPhone is good, but I don't know, in your case, if it's the right choice. Because if you're thinking about getting an iPad to do your emails on and do the social media or do all the different things you want to do, then an iPad might cover off a lot of that smart technology you need. And actually, you could maybe get away with something that's an accessible smartphone that would work for you, but maybe not with all the gubbins of the having to figure out the touchscreen and deal with all that. So I would recommend maybe the Blindshell Classic mobile that I've been talking about. I know, because I'm thinking about what the case may be, what the user case may be here. So you're coming from the Nokia, so you're used to having the buttons, and I'm thinking it might be better for you if you had something, a similar experience, so you can get on with it. You've still got the T9 keyboard on the Blindshell Classic. You do have those added smarter features. It's not a dumb phone. It doesn't just do a call and text. You can do more with it. You can send email on it as well. You can watch YouTube videos on it. It's very small. I mean, it's probably the size of a Nokia 3310, maybe a little bit bigger. But it's a nice little phone, and everything on it speaks. The entire menu system talks. You cannot get lost. You can't make mistakes with it. It's a really easy-to-use device. And I wonder if, with coupling it, if you were just getting a device to do everything, one device, I'd say an iPhone, and I would recommend the iPhone SE. But because that, again, home button, what you like, you're getting the latest technology at a good, affordable price. But I wonder if you need that. So my recommendation would be try the Blindshell Classic. As for the iPad, I would say, I'd be tempted to say hold off, because I think a new one's about to drop. We're waiting on an update on the iPad 10.2. Is it 10.2, one that they brought out for education? So, yeah, that's a good iPad. I actually got one of those recently for my wife. I got it. I got some money off the deal, so I decided to. Not because I'd do any mentions, I should say. I just got, it was a, I think Verri did a deal on it, so we got it from there. And we bought it, and she loves it. It's a great size screen. It has the home button. It still has a headphone port as well, so that's nice. It's a really nice machine, and it is very swift. You know, she said no issues at all. And she doesn't use VoiceOver on it. She uses everything with the text size ramped right up, and she really likes it. So maybe that is an option. Comes in about 349 starting price. iPhone SE starting at, what, 449, 419? Can't remember now.
Well, he wants to update his iPad as well, though. You see, if this was an email from someone who had their N73, was it? I loved that
N70.
Oh, okay. I had an N73. and what should they go for, then yeah, Blind Shell, because it's kind of the next gen, isn't it? And it's a lot smarter and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You don't have to kind of learn a touchscreen. But come on, you know, he's got an iPad already. He's familiar with iOS. He wants to buy another one or considering it. So for me, the main question would be screen size. What does he want out of a larger screen? Has he got some residual vision, or is someone, you know, people in his household or whatever? But if it's basically, I need to replace my phone, I want to be able to do A, B, and C that iOS can definitely do, and iPadOS too, why not go for an SE? Because it'll be cheaper, because you're replacing two devices. Well, you're only having to replace one device when at the moment he's looking like he would need to update both of them. So, and if he can do everything on the size of the screen, that 4.7 inch, then bro, one device.
Well, I'm assuming, as a lot of people do, will buy the iPad for not just him, but for his family. So possibly it's a case of he wants something he can use, but the family can use as well. Mm-hmm. And the phone would be for him. So, I mean, I would honestly always probably say you should think about a smartphone like the iPhone. If you're used to the iPad, you're used to how the system works. But then again, maybe he's not using VoiceOver, and that is a whole other learning curve. Whereas with the Blind Shell Classic, it's a very, I mean, literally, it is a five-button cursor setup, you know, left, right, up, down, and a select button in the middle. I mean, it is really simple. And, you know, I love it. And I'll be honest, if the iPhone wasn't accessible today, I would be so happy with the Blind Shell Classic, because I think it's a great little phone. I was really impressed by it.
And as far as your recommendation for someone who wants to update their iPad or get one for the first time, just go for the entry level, the new one that came out. That's exactly, super good value. And unless you need the kind of pencil support, or, you know, the smart cover or something.
Depends on your level of vision, really, with the pencil, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's not going to work for you or I, but it could work for someone else who's got a little bit of vision. I'm thinking about people with, I mean, Robin Spinks, for example, who's on with us. You know, he's got enough vision to use the pencil and benefit from that. And I get that, and I think that's brilliant, you know, if that can be usable. But again, but in saying that, if you buy the basic version, you can buy the pencil for it.
Oh, that's right. The new one's got
the entry level.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Well, the Gen 1 pencil, isn't it?
Gen 1, yeah, that's right.
But absolutely, there's nothing compromise about that new iPad. And it's
and you can buy a keyboard
price
for it.
Yeah.
If you wanted, you could put a keyboard on there. I've just bought, on that, I bought a new key. I'm still waiting for it. I thought it'd be here by now. But I bought a Bridge Pro for my iPad Pro 2020. So I got the 11-inch version, and I know I've been railing against Face ID for some time, but weirdly, when you have the iPad on a keyboard setup, and you obviously have it set up almost like a laptop, then Face ID is actually brilliant, because you don't need to really, I don't know where the camera is on my iPad, but it always seems to find me. So that's good. You know, I'm happy with that. It knows where I am. And I'm obviously at a decent enough distance that it's able to find me in the crowd. So I never have a problem with it. So that works out pretty well. But again, that's a very expensive option, and I don't think it's the one for you. So happy shopping. Let's get another email.
This one is from Oren. Dear Stephen, this is Oren O'Neill here from RTE, which is a public service broadcaster in Dublin. Hope this email finds you well. I am a Blindy, and I listen to you and your colleagues' podcast each week, something I thoroughly enjoy, I might add. He's going to ask some questions here. So the first one, on the episode back on June the 2nd, you mentioned that on Freeview, the user is able to adjust the volume of AD separately to program audio, but not on Sky. Would you be able to expand on this a little more? Because the reason I ask is that myself and a colleague are working on a research project with the intent of creating a standard for audio description, recording and mix level. This is something close to my heart, and I am producing AD here in RTE. And since starting, I've noticed that depending on content provider, audio description levels can vary quite considerably. I think there is a need to create a standard to share with the EBU and audio describers, which would lay out the correct AD level depending on program content. It seems to me that some audio describers set up their recording systems to a default and don't make adjustments if the content audio level is different. As a former audio engineer, I hate the thought of that happening. So when you mentioned that you could adjust the audio description level on Freeview channels, I decided that I had to contact you for more information, if you have it. I know that the EBU are looking at ways of allowing the user to tweak audio levels, but I don't think that it's been introduced Europe-wide yet. Oren has a second point, but do you want to add anything there quickly?
Yeah, I was only referring, and it's important, Oren, to know this, I was only referring to one particular TV set, or at least one series of TVs, and that was the version I have of the Samsung TV range. It's a 7 series that I own, and I've been in contact with Samsung since the last conversation that we've had on the show and we've had with you, that it's this TV does have good experience with the voice guidance system and all that. But that feature that you're talking about, the ability to change the volume of the audio description, is only part of this Samsung system. So that's not something I'm aware of that exists in other Freeview boxes or in other TVs with Freeview built in. However, I've only checked the Samsung one because that's the one I chose to buy. I haven't seen it in my Sony TV that I've got upstairs. But that doesn't mean it's not in existence somewhere else, because there are variants on Sony. Some Sony TVs work off the classic operating system. Some are now using Android operating systems. That might have additional controls built in. The truth is, I don't know, so I'm not going to speculate on it. But what I'll say is that the feature I talked about was something that is built into the Samsung range. And it does work for Freeview, but of course that doesn't apply to Sky or Apple TV or any box that you plug in. They all work off their own approach. And I think it is really, I agree with you, I think that it's really important we get into this and we figure out ways to customize our audio. We've talked about this a lot, Robin, recently, about customizing audio to suit ourselves, where the audio lives, how it sits. Could you detach audio description entirely from the program, so that if Robin's watching, I mean, you're a sighted family, right? So you are sitting there with your wife and your children, and you're watching TV, they might not want the audio description, which is perfectly understandable.
In so my you can ears have it in your only, ear. Please. Yep.
Yeah. So you could make that choice. It might only be one ear versus both ear, you know, that kind of thing. So it's just how we want to get to a point where we can customize more. So I agree wholeheartedly with you on that.
Oren's second point here. On a totally separate note, I wonder if you would be good enough to tell me what audio equipment you guys use for recording the Tech Talk podcast. It is fantastic quality. I'm considering starting my own podcast, and I'm looking for advice on microphones and mixers, etc. So do we want to go around the room and explain what we're all using?
Right, you first, Andy.
Well, I'm speaking into a Rode NT1A microphone, which is connected to my Focusrite 2i2 audio interface. And that just goes straight, USB, I believe, goes straight into my PC, which is running Windows 10. Recording using Adobe Audition. And we chat, the three of us, using Zoom. I think that's pretty much everything I've got. Is that right? I'm waiting for...
And record our own...
Signed, yes, yeah, we're recording locally, and then that gets mixed down once everyone has the files.
That's the key point for us, because and a lot of, we get a lot of questions about this on everything I do. I get lots of question marks over how do we record, because lots of people say, "Well, I use Zoom, and it doesn't sound anything like what you create." But the truth is, that's because we take local recordings. Mm. This is not a live show. Shock, horror. But it's not a live show, yeah. Because if it was, it would sound like that. So we don't do that.
There are times when we're chatting away that Stephen and Robin will notice that my audio level is sometimes crackly, and sometimes that can be affected in the recording. But locally, it sounds fine. So when you hear it, we're all sounding wonderful.
That's right. And I've got to say, big plaudits to Robin, who puts it all together at the end of it.
Well,
week,
I mean,
incredible.
To be honest, it's literally just taking 4 tracks, because we have sounds as well. And, you know, perhaps doing the odd little tiny tweak and then just mixing them together, because this is literally a one-take show. You know, you say we don't do it live, and that's absolutely true. But at the same time, you know, all of the items that you hear, the jingles, everything, is played in live. So it's an as live recording, let's face it. And it takes us, you know, it's a 57 something minute show, and it takes us an hour to record it. So I think it has that kind of spontaneity, maybe, I don't know, but you know, it doesn't feel like it's done in 58 takes because it ain't.
Well, that I kind of like that aspect of doing the show that way, and I think any podcaster should do the same, because if you do fluff or you make a mistake, that's real. That's how it works. That's what real life is like. You know, I will fall over my words. I will say the wrong thing fairly regularly. Yes, but it's but that's okay, and actually that's part of it. So you know, we do have a bit of a rule, an official rule to ourselves, really, which is that you know once we hit record, once we start, we don't stop until we get to the end of the show.
Mm-hmm. Unless
the only reason,
unless Amazon
something happens,
yeah, unless Amazon, really.
Yeah, unless well, as you say that
reason.
As you say that, I muted actually just there because of an Amazon delivery. I mean, that's no joke. Just happened just there. That's why I told you to go first on that, Andy, because I could hear the dog getting ready to screech, and I thought, right, I'll just mute out of this and let you guys talk. We record it as live. It's great fun. I use a Shure SM7B microphone, which I love. It's a great microphone. It's connected into a Rodecaster Pro mixing desk, which I chose because of its capabilities to record multi-track recording. So I have four mic channels. I've got a USB channel, which is connected to my MacBook. I've got a TRRS channel, which basically means I can connect a mobile phone straight into this. A TRRS cable is where if you were to look at the plug that goes into the phone or into the desk, instead of having one little ring around it, it's got two, and that means basically it's like an input and an output. So I can send audio as well as receive the audio. So I can have a call via the mixing desk into my phone. But if that's not enough, you get a Bluetooth channel as well, and the Bluetooth channel you can connect anything to, a computer, the Amazon Echo sometimes I do that, or whatever. And then there's a sound channel, and that sound channel is next to the right of that are eight buttons. And so when I hit my email jingle and I play that, email. I'm actually playing a little pad. I just press that little pad, which has got my email on it. And because it's nice and tactile in nature, I mean, I must admit, you can easily press them. Mm. It's a very light touch.
It is
a
beautiful looking piece of equipment as well. Yeah.
It is a gorgeous looking thing. The only downside to it is it's touchscreen based, which immediately goes. So basically, be my eyes. There are some volunteers who I think have become experts on the Rodecaster Pro because I've spent so much time with them saying, right, what button should I press? And it's like the golden shot, trying to find the right button and tap it properly because there's no audible feedback. But there is the recording is built in, so it records to a micro SD card, which I can then put into my computer, and I then send that file to Robin. And I only sent him the microphone channel that's been recorded, because it records all of those channels separately. So it means that, you know, even though I'm hearing you guys in my ear on Zoom, that your part of the conversation is not being recorded, so we're not getting that horrible feedback, and you know, we're not hearing, you know, bits of you know, that sometimes you hear that horrible feedback that you get sometimes because it's leaking out of someone else's headphones. We don't have that problem. So that's essentially how we do it. Cat's out the bag, guys.
But just to say, that Be My Eyes flurry of calls, that was pretty much a one-off thing because it's now set up.
Well, it is. And also, I've kind of, this is mad to say, and Sean Priest, who does this show occasionally with us, he thinks I'm insane, but the muscle memory really kicks in and I'm able to change settings without even looking at it. And that's, I don't even know how I do that, to be honest, but I can do it because I'm so used to saying, right, it's that corner, to here, and you know, it doesn't always work, but you know, more often than not, I get there. It is doable for sure, but it does take a bit of getting used to.
And just very quickly, it's a brilliant machine. Robin, what do you use to edit the podcast together?
So I should say my gear as well.
Oh yeah, your gear.
So I have an ATR 2100 microphone, which I think is probably a lot cheaper than your guys' ones, but I think does a good job. I wouldn't say it's amateur, you know, it's a pro microphone.
No, it's a good mic. A lot of podcasters use it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've got a brilliant Allen and Heath Z10 mixing desk, kindly sent to me by Stephen. Really good. It's got a sea of knobs. And is it? Well, that's because you got the Rodecaster.
Exactly, yeah.
But it's absolutely brilliant. And I could talk about all the inputs and outputs I've got as well, but I could, you know, literally fade up and down any of the sources. And, you know, it's really, really fully functional. So I love that. I use Audacity. So when I'm recording my track, I record it in QuickTime. I've got a Mac here with a Windows virtual machine as well, so I could choose, but I do it on the QuickTime on the Mac, really reliable, good quality. And then when I'm putting all the tracks together, I use Audacity on the Windows side. There is a Mac version as well, but it's not quite as accessible. But Audacity, it's free. It's definitely a pro multi-track audio editor. And it's very, very accessible. And you can reassign all the keystrokes if you don't like the ones that it comes with out of the box. Every single menu item, every single dialogue option can be given a hotkey as well. So it's very flexible and it's really easy to edit with it. So, yeah, that's what I use.
There you go. We're almost out of time. We've got time for just one more email and it will be very brief.
I've had to go through the list to try and find a really short one. This one's from Pete. On episode 330, Andy read out an email from Peter in Nottingham, which referred to a podcast called Blindside or something sounding similar. Can you, if possible, confirm what this podcast is actually called? I couldn't quite tell from listening. Thanks in advance. That's from Pete, but obviously not the same Pete. And all he says, P.S. Chocolate in Cupboard and NVDA and Andy McNabb.
Yeah, that's like mandatory. Cord, come on, guys. The other people haven't been doing that.
Yeah. It was The Blind Side, wasn't it? It was Blind Side Podcast.
The Blind Side. I think it's The Blind Side, and it's Jonathan Moses, isn't it? Yeah.
I also want to say hello to Robert Hoare, who's been in touch with us as well. He's given me a bit of a ticking off because I was had my speech too fast on the demo for Dolphin Easy Reader, so he was ticking me off on that one, and quite rightly so. So yes, we'll get that sorted. I do apologise. Also, want to say hello to Corey Brown as well on Twitter, who said, you know, when you were talking about improvements to Windows and Microsoft, you didn't mention the improvements to Magnifier in your bit about Windows 10 in 2004. She says, while I use Fusion for work, I've started using my personal laptop with Narrator, and it's much better than it used to be. I tried it once when I didn't have my JAWS dongle, and now it's my first port of call on my new machine, which happens to be a Dell XPS 13. She says, P.S. Andy McNabb, and always chocolate from the cupboard, never the fridge.
I'm definitely an outsider here, aren't I?
You are.
The odd man.
I'm so glad that Corey agrees with me. I know I'm not alone. Guys, listen, thank you so much for this. I'm glad we did an extra one this week because we had so many emails to get through, and we've made a little bit of a dent in them. We'll get more for sure next week, but that's it from us for this week. If you want to keep in touch, we love getting your emails. It really does. It's the beating heart of the programs. Thank you for taking your time. We really appreciate everyone, which is why we read out every email, the good and the bad. We read them all out here, so do send in your emails. Keep in touch, keep the conversation going. You can do that by emailing techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or you can find us on Twitter @RNIBRadio. Robin Christopherson, as always, thank you.
Thanks, Stephen. Thanks, Andy.
Andy, thanks a lot.
Cheers, guys.
Catch you next week.